The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
This episode of Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part by BetOnline.ag. Hey man, it's the greatest time of the year in sports. NFL, college football, McGregor versus Khabib, and the UFC, this is all happening right now. Looking for a place to make all your online wagers? Then head to BetOnline.ag and use promo code PODCAST1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus when signing up today. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and the exclusive partner of the Podcast One Sportsnet.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. I'm sitting on my ass at 317 Gimmick Street in front of my podcast table. Got my laptop computer out. Got my Zoom H6 recording device rolling sound. Callie, my prized black lab, is sleeping peacefully at my feet. I hope she don't wake up and start barking for me to throw the damn tennis ball. I love this dog, but she is a big pain in the ass. But I tell you what, at 1 year and 6 months, she's a hell of a dog. And as she gets older, man, this dog is going to be pure gold, just like Hershey the Wonder Dog and Moolah. Love my labs. Hey, man, before I get into what I've been up to lately, I got a good podcast for you today. This is an interesting podcast. It kind of just came out of thin blue air, really. AJ Kirsch was over a few weeks ago. And he had made a run down from the Bay Area down to Tucson, Arizona to do a fitness expo and a wrestling show. And he had somebody riding shotgun and splitting some wheel time with him. And his name, as he is on the independent scene, is Sledge the Metalhead Maniac. Brian was joining him on that trip. So, man, as I sit there and talk back and forth with AJ about WWE 2K19 and all the stuff that he went through making that, blowing his wheel out, getting to be the voice, auditioning for this movie, and it turned out to be 2K19. What a story that was. It was awesome. I'm so proud of AJ. And Sledge, Brian, was sitting right next door, and we had a microphone for him. He chipped in a couple of times, but it was basically me and AJ, and I found out that how much Brian loved music, and he also had some addiction problems, and he was also 7 or 8 years in the pro wrestling business. So, man, off the side, when I'd hit the stop button, hell, we'd start going back and forth talking about heavy metal and all kinds of stuff. I said, hey, man, I said, when we get through with AJ, I said, you want to do a podcast? And he said, hell yeah. So Brian Sledge is basically, he said, hey, man, Steve, I'm an open book. You know, we can talk about whatever you want to talk about. If I can talk about my addiction and help somebody out, I want to talk about my addiction and help somebody out. So, man, we're going to talk pro wrestling. We're going to talk about some music. Listen to my Arbitrary Firehouse mention. Brian didn't really get off on the Firehouse mention. See if you pay attention to it. I drop a lot of these things every single podcast. I just don't know if you pick up on them. Someone sent me a text message the other day about one little nugget I dropped, and he picked up on it. But anyway, it's a conversation about being on the road, professional wrestling, addiction, music, wrestling, psychology, in-ring work, all kinds of cool shit. I enjoyed talking to Sledge. Man, he's overcome a lot. He's been through a lot. He's lived a hell of a damn life, and he's been sober for a long ass time right now, so I'm proud of him for maintaining that. And he's got some stories to tell, and he gets a little emotional during the podcast, and I can see why. When he's telling these stories, man, he's lived them, and he battled through them, and he came out on the other side. Sledge, you can follow him on Twitter at Sledge805 and see where he's at on the independent wrestling scene. But I enjoyed talking to him. Before we talk to him, let me tell you about my little trip to Nevada, the Silver State, when we went to Broken Skull Ranch 2.0. Man, we went down there, and we're doing some remodeling work on the house, and so we're trying to get things ready for that. So I basically had my nose to the grindstone pretty much the whole time, getting work done, doing some opens and reads for the podcast. I didn't get out on my damn buggies at all. Well, I rode them around the block. what out this county road. I rode them down the road for a few miles to charge all the batteries. My dirt bike, I just kept the cables on the battery. But I took my Brute Force 750 out, and I put on my helmet, put on my riding gear, and I just went out there and just blazed the damn trail, man. I was hauling ass, just climbing stuff, a lot of technical stuff, doing a little bit of crawling, a lot of just, you know, burning two wheels. I've been trying to burn them tires off there so I can get a heavier ply tire so I don't get any flats. I haven't had any flats on that four-wheeler yet, but I blew out a sidewall on my Terex, so I don't want to blow out another sidewall and be out there in the middle of nowhere. I did put together my to-go kit to carry with me on my ATVs or my UTVs. I've got a jack in there. I've got a little compressor. I've got plugs. I got slime for my tires. I am never going to get stuck out there with a flat tire again. Luckily, when my nephew was down and we got that flat on that Terex, we had the four-wheeler with us because we were taking two vehicles. But when you're out there in the middle of nowhere, you always have to be ready. So I got that all put together. That was on my list of things to do. I am trying to get all of my signs set up in my shop. I got a bunch of porcelain enamel signs from gas and oil stuff that I collect, and all my neon clocks. I've been trying to nail all those things up. I got a bunch of cool Kawasaki signs and stuff I'm going to put up. Anyway, I got all my vehicles hooked up to chargers, drove some of them around. Man, I'll tell you what, I got enough 4x4 stuff. I got a Ford Bronco. I've got an 88 Ram Charger. I got my Duramax pickup. I got my 03 Z71, and I found a damn Corvette Z06. And I've had three Corvettes in my lifetime. I had an 02, an 03 Z06, I had an 07 Stingray, silver, two silver ones and a yellow one. And I've been telling my wife, I said, man, I've really been wanting another Corvette. And she goes, what are you going to do with a Corvette? I said, well, just drive it. I mean, it's kind of the, you know, the ultimate American sports car. And, you know, they're going to go to that mid-engine. And I don't know about the mid-engine Corvette, so it'd be kind of cool to have one. And I found one that was just a hell of a damn deal. It was just a hell of a damn deal. I just couldn't pass up. So, man, I got me a 2017 Corvette Z06, and, man, I took that thing out for a ride the other day, and I was just cruising along. And I tell you what, I nailed the throttle on that son of a bitch. And I'll tell you one thing, at 650 horsepower, 650 foot-pound of torque, a supercharged V8, man, that son of a bitch, it will set your ass back in the seat and will break those tires loose at whatever speed you're going on the highway. You talk about being extremely careful, that motherfucker will haul ass, and that's the bottom line. Most times I just cruise around in it, and I only got room for one dog in there, so Callie's kind of my shotgun partner, so I'll put Callie in the shotgun seat, and I'll get over in the driver's seat, and it's easy for her to jump into. She can jump in all my four-wheel drive stuff, but it sure is easy for her to step into that Corvette, and man, you talk about a fun-ass car. I've just been really enjoying it. And I needed a little bit of consulting on that damn thing before I bought it. And I got a steal of a deal on it, just a steal of a deal. And that's the only reason I got it. I called old Goldberg up. You know, Bill Goldberg, he's just a car fanatic, and he buys all those. He's got so many muscle cars, and he's so knowledgeable about cars. And I reached out to him for a little bit of a pep talk, and then Bill had me fired up. And then I had to go into one more car source, and I called old John Cena up. And, you know, John drives all those Italian cars. He's had all those muscle cars. He's a car fanatic and an enthusiast and very knowledgeable as well. And, you know, after I ran some numbers by him, kind of just kicked it around a little bit, I said, you know what? I might as well pull the trigger on this deal because I ain't going to find another one like this with so few miles, so new for the money. And so, shit, went ahead and bought it. And got my damn title in the mail today, so I'll go out there next time I go and get some license plate thrown on that thing and be all legal and ready to go. But that is a badass car, and I'm really, really enjoying it. It'll be winter coming up here pretty quick. There's going to be snow on the ground, so I guess that motherfucker's going to be sitting in the shop. But, man, when everything thaws back out, the kid will be on the road. And I'm looking to take that sumbitch out on the road. I'm going to drive it down to Texas. I might drive that motherfucker all the way across the country because I ain't just going to let it sit there like I've done my last Corvettes or Porsche 911 Turbo. I had twin turbo and just let it sit in the garage and not get miles on them. I'm going to put 100,000 miles on this sumbitch. I'm going to roll the odometer on it. And that's the bottom line. I am going to enjoy the shit out of this car and drive it till the wheels fall off and I'll never buy another one. I'm done. But with that being said, that's what's going on in Nevada. Just nothing but a work, trying to play hard, get out there and enjoy the mountains on my buggies and my four-wheelers. I love that new car and having a blast in that. And back here in Los Angeles, take care of business. Brian Cage is coming by the house tomorrow. We're going to do a podcast. Well, Brian's been wrestling for a pretty good while. I started my research on him. I've been watching him for a long time anyway over in Lucha Underground and all the other places he's wrestled at. Big dude, good body, good work. Check out some more of his matches. He'll be on the show next week. He's going to come on Tuesday or Thursday, depending on what kind of language we use. And then I'll get with Sean, my producer. He's got some other people from the wrestling scene lined up, and we'll get them in here and have a conversation with them. But if you didn't check out my podcast with Joshua Headley, I apologize for the sound delay on that. I wasn't real happy with the recording of that, but that dude can sing his ass off. He's down there in Australia. He left Los Angeles yesterday to get down there, and he's going to go down there and tour and promote his album, and he's headed to the WWE Super Showdown. I just called the WWE offices to my contact over there to see if I could hook him up with a ticket, and whether I hook him up with one or not, he is bound and determined to go. Hell, I've heard. I was watching Raw, SmackDown the other night. I guess they got, 70,000 people already going over there. It's going to be a hell of an event, and I'll be watching that thing as they stream it live. I think it said comes on at 5 a.m. in the morning over here. Whatever time zone it is, I watch the damn replay. But that's a big time show, and they're doing some good stuff overseas. That deal they got over Saudi Arabia, that's a big deal. People making rumors that I was training for a comeback to go over there and wrestle. I ain't heard nothing about making no comeback. Shit, I ain't hit a set of ropes in 15 years. Hell, I hit the pillow last night about midnight, 12:30, but I ain't hit no ropes. I ain't grabbed no headlock. I ain't getting nobody no tackle, hip toss. Stomped the shit out of somebody in the turnbuckle, stomped a mud hole and walked it dry. Brian Alvarez says, don't hold your breath if you're waiting on Steve Austin to return to the ring. Brian Alvarez, you're right, brother. Don't hold your breath, because if you do, you're going to be turning blue, waiting for my ass. Anyway, that's enough bullshit. I just thought I'd bring you up to speed with all the bullshit I got going on. Some of it's good, some of it's cool, some of it's boring as fuck. But if it is, let's shift gears in and let's talk about Brian Sledge, the metalhead maniac, as he takes us through his life story. And, you know, we're going to kind of go long story short. Didn't have a chance to research him. It's just two cats from the business of pro wrestling shooting the breeze about the business of pro wrestling, man, and lifestyles and getting caught up in things and coming out clean on the other side. I enjoyed the shit out of talking to Brian. We're going to get to Brian, but before we get to Brian, listen up. It's a great time to be a sports fan. Not only do we have football in full swing and the baseball season heading into the playoffs, we got basketball and hockey around the corner. And if that ain't enough, the biggest fight of the year in the UFC is coming at you this Saturday, October 6th, as Conor McGregor takes on Khabib in Las Vegas. For all the wagers, lines, and props for this massive fight, our friends at BetOnline.ag have you covered. Head over to BetOnline.ag to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. When you're there, use promo code PODCAST1. That's PODCAST, O-N-E, to receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. That's right. BetOnline.ag is an exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet and our go-to for online sports betting. You need someone to get behind? These are the guys. Don't get left out. Get over to betonline.ag and use promo code PODCAST1 to start winning with your online sportsbook experts.
Hey, this is Jordan Harbinger. I used to host the Art of Charm podcast, but now it's time for something new. The Jordan Harbinger Show. Did you know you can be entertained and actually get a boost in your life at the same time? On this show, we dig into the superpowers of the world's most interesting thinkers and top talents. Then we deliver them to you right into your ears. But I get it. We're not all superheroes. That's why we give you their blueprint so you can live what you listen. After 1,000 interviews, learning 5 languages, and getting arrested in a country that doesn't even exist anymore, I'm now more ready than ever to introduce you to the Jordan Harbinger Show. Listen free to The Jordan Harbinger Show, available on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
With 317 Gimmick Street, AJ Kirsch passed through town, talked about 2K19. He brought his partner in crime, Sledge, the metalhead maniac. Brian, yes, you've been sitting on my right-hand side all day long. So we said, hell, man, he jumped in on the podcast a little bit last week or whenever we played that. So I figured, he got a bunch of stories to tell. We'll do a podcast together. AJ might chime in here and there. Sledge, how are you?
What's going on, man? Good. I'm happy to be here. Happy to be in your presence, man.
Oh, man, I ain't heard nobody say that in a long time, especially my wife. Hey, y'all, you guys were down in Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson, Arizona, yep.
Did a shot down there. Who'd you work?
I worked a guy named Double D Dave Dutra.
How'd it go?
Good.
From what Instant Classic?
Masters and Carlita were there, and they said it was main event quality, so I guess that was good.
How are those guys doing?
Good, man.
Chris Masters from WWE and Carlito way back in the day from WWE.
And
as I was talking to AJ, I mean, dude, time flies by. When you look, you know, way back in the day when those guys both started in WWE is quite some time ago.
Yeah.
How are they holding up?
Good, man. Masters still looks like $1 million. Carlito's look great as well. I've known Masters for years. I've wrestled Masters.
Is he still here in Venice?
No, now he lives in Canada.
Chris lives in Canada?
Chris lives in Canada.
Why? I mean, that's a great place, but I mean, when I knew him to live in Venice down by Gold's Gym,
right.
And you move out of the country, why?
I don't know. I asked him the same thing because when we were at the Fitness Expo yesterday, we were talking. I was like, hey, are you still down in LA? And he's like, no, man, I live in Canada. And I went,
why?
Canada? Yeah. What? He's like, yeah. I was like, I miss SoCal. I miss it so much. He goes, because after I left, all of a sudden it became like a hotbed for wrestling.
Yep.
You know, and I was like, why don't you move back? And he's like, well, it costs some money. You know, so, yeah, it makes sense. So
where in Canada is he at?
I'm not quite sure.
PCO was on a podcast a couple weeks ago and had a great time talking to him. And we talked about all the, you know, problems, you know, getting across the border, boys carrying stuff, and, you know, so all the hangups. Man, when you're trying to make all your shots and you got to keep coming here, because there's way more indie shots in the United States than there is going on in Canada. The indie scene here in the States, I mean, I've been talking to all these indie guys for the past few weeks, and I mean, like, it's a hotbed out there. So anyway, I hope he's doing well. Where's Carlito based out of now?
I'm not quite sure. I didn't get like a whole lot of time to talk to Carlito. It was just me, more Masters, just kind of shooting the shit.
Hey, man, what's the vibe? What's the locker room at some of these indie shows? Because as I tell all these indie guys that come through here, always being a part of a territory system, you know, and everybody's kind of coming from different parts of the United States.
Right.
And the same thing when we're in the territories, but we're all traveling together, you know, and we're on a loop.
Yeah.
So, dude, is it a helpful vibe? Is it like a bro vibe? Is it a brotherhood? I mean, what's the story?
It's competitive. Well, yeah. I'm very competitive. I want to go out there and I want to steal the show. I want to have a match of the night. I want to make sure that everybody, when they leave that place, they love me or they hate me. And making them want to come back for more, which makes me more valuable to the company. But some guys have ego. Some people don't believe that they need to. And some people believe that, hey, man, like, I'm still really trying to make it. Some guys are weekend warriors and happy in the spot where they're at. And some guys are like me and want more. You know, it really, honestly, depends.
Where's your next shot?
Saturday, I will be in Salinas, California for Big Time Wrestling, and I'm wrestling Eli Drake.
How many times you wrestle in a month?
Ooh, well, August, I just got back from a tour of England with WAW, which is ran by the Knight Dynasty, which is Paige's dad. I wrestled Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, off Friday, wrestled a double on Saturday, triple on Sunday, off Monday. So I wrestled about 30-something times in about 3.5 weeks span.
You did a triple shot?
Yeah, triple shot on Sundays, yeah. I just stayed in gear.
Was it in different locations?
Different locations, yep.
How far were the locations away? About 50, 60 miles?
Yeah, about that, yeah. Okay. And it was one of those things where it was setting up the ring, tearing it down, doing a show, driving on the road, putting it up, tearing it down, on the road, onto another one. Absolutely.
Oh, dude, man, when we was doing double shots back in the WWF days, you know, we roll in, you know, like I was talking to Bob Holly a while back. I mean, I worked with Bob in Pittsburgh, and then we would drive to Cincinnati and would, you know, work the same match.
Right.
But they got a different ring set up, already waiting for us, ready to go. It's WWF. And then, you know, Sunday we're going to do the same thing. You know, double shots are a bitch.
Yes.
You know, because you've been on the road, you're strung out. And we'll get to this in a little bit. But, I mean, you're dead dog tired, and all of a sudden, you know, you're looking for the weekend. And don't get me wrong. you know, in the business, you love being on the road. You love being in front of the crowd. You love being around the boys. You love the work. You love the adrenaline spike. But double shots are a bitch just because, you know, two times on Saturday, two times on Sunday, and then you're going to film, you know, live Monday Night Raw. So it can be a grind. A triple shot sounds a little extreme.
It was a little brutal. And then you're not done with your day until about 10, 11 at night, and then you have to drive back to where you're staying at. So you're not back there until about 1 a.m, you know, and then you have that day off the next day. And on the day off, you're washing your laundry because you're away from home, or you're washing your gear, or you're just trying to honestly just recover, you know. But what was cool about being over there is I got to, also train. They were doing a week training camp over there as well. So on my days off, I actually went to the training camp on Monday and Friday and actually got some cool, training.
Dude, what interests me about, well, first, you know, I used to, watch World of Sport Wrestling way back in the day.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, I couldn't find it anymore. And when William Regal came to WCW years ago, I'd been there, I don't know, maybe a year, year and a half. I can't remember. I was still green in the business, but I was pretty decent. And I was having some pretty good matches. And all of a sudden, Regal comes in. And I was like, man, who's this guy? You know, because like you said, man, you're very competitive. So was I.
Yeah.
So should everybody be.
Everybody.
And I'm thinking, all right, who is this cat? What's he got? What's he all about? Man, all of a sudden, he goes out there and he kind of that European, you know, he's from England.
Right.
That European flair and just, they move different.
Yeah,
to absolutely. Me, their body language is different. They move different. They work different. They wrestle different. Yep. That's style. And, boy, all of a sudden, man, I think Regal was working baby when he first came in, and he was selling his ass off. And I was just watching the curtain. You know, I shook his hand, said, hey, how you doing? And I just watched him work, and it was like, oh, my God, this guy's really, really good, and he really sells. I went up to him after the match. I said, hey, man, I said, that was awesome. I said, man, nice sell job.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, well, that's what it's about, right? That's all he said.
Yeah.
We became instant friends and travel partners and got to a lot of damn shenanigans together. But did you learn anything?
Yeah, absolutely. The Welsh wizard Jason Cross is one of the
say that three times fast.
Right, yeah. Exactly, right? Is one of the head trainers over there at WAW. And that guy is he did World of Sport back in the day. He is absolutely people forget how important chaining is in the wrestling business.
Say it again.
People forget how important chaining is in the wrestling business.
Thank you, sir. Explain that.
Okay. Knowing how to chain wrestle is an art in itself.
Damn right it is. Don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of the high spot, but I love the chain wrestling. When it's applied properly, it tells a story. And those guys, and Regal is a master at it, guys like Fit Finley. That groundwork is staying together. And then when you do get a part and you go to the high spot, it just makes everything seem that much more important, better. Just it's the commas and the periods and the exclamation points. I love solid chain wrestling.
Absolutely. And talking about Regal, I was just watching the other day at FCW, Dean Ambrose and William Regal, and just the chaining they did at FCW. And I don't remember what it was, what the stipulation of the match was, but I want to say that Dean was his shoulder was hurt, so Regal really focused on the shoulder and going after it. And I want to say the finish was Regal ate the turnbuckle that was exposed, and it was just. Just the magic that they put in there with the chaining really brought me, reminded me of the stuff that I learned while I was over there in England. Because they do rounds over there in England,
I
too.
Know. The five-minute rounds.
They do five-minute rounds. And then also they do, instead of the five count and the ropes, they do public warnings. So it's totally different from the American style over there to their style.
Right.
But they've also adjusted to the American indie style a little bit as well, so...
So when you're out on these shows, can you do – okay, what is – I was just talking to MJF, who was here a few weeks ago. Are the indie crowds, are the different federations or companies that you work for, is each crowd expecting something different? I mean, if you went in there and just did a bunch of chain wrestling with some good shit now.
Right.
But did some – Are they going to be accepting of that? Or they want to go all out and want to see the suicide shit?
That's actually a great question. And if you can do all of it, awesome. But at the same time, though, I believe you need to know your place on the card as well.
Right.
Okay, so if you're doing a double down in the first, you know, you're jerking the curtain and you're doing a double down. You know what I mean? Or right. doing, as you say, 10 pounds of shit in an 8-pound bag, you know?
Yeah, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is a lot of people, not a lot of people, I would say some people think chain wrestling is boring because I'm a wrestling fanatic. I do not.
No.
I think it's a highlight. It's fantastic to watch two guys or two girls, whatever, that do it well, do it. So from the people that are great athletes that are doing tremendous high spots and moves, that's fine, to your grinders, to your brawlers. To me, whatever style it is, if it's good, I want to see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if it's being done well, I want to see it. I guess maybe I'm answering my own question. If it's done bad, you know, nobody wants to see it,
right?
But if you're doing high level shit, you know,
right,
people are going to sign in and jump on.
Absolutely.
So then, what is? Tell me a little bit about Sledge, the Metalhead Maniac, because you've been doing this for 7 years,
yep,
and you're making a living at it. How long have you been Sledge? What possessed you to come up with this gimmick? And were you another gimmick before you were this one?
No, I've always been Sledge. I've always been the Metalhead.
Dude, that's good.
Yeah, I've always been the Metalhead Maniac Sledge for 7 years. I transitioned from playing in a band. They used to call me the Hammer. And I played drums in a metal band. And I just took Hammer and just put Sledge, and there it was, you know? And then I was like, they got to have a moniker. It just can't be Sledge. So
a lot of guys don't get that, dude. When I got into business, I just wanted to be a wrestler, so I was Steve Williams, which was my given name.
Right.
And then Dutch Mantel gave me Steve Austin, Stunning Steve Austin. It was always just a name. The Ringmaster was a name. I never was a gimmick until I was Stone Cold, so
right,
I never really understood what a character was. You did at a very early age. What possessed you the ability to say, hey, I need a strong base character along with my work, but you were character based from
right.
the get go.
Absolutely.
I was smart.
And it's just me turned up. That's all it is. It's like same as Stone Cold. Right. I'm a straight metalhead. I love 80s hair metal. I love new age metal.
Yeah.
I'm not really big into like the grunge stuff. I'll say it right now. I hate Nirvana.
Like Nirvana was kind of like, they were probably like, to me, like as far as popularity, they're probably number one.
Now, right.
Alice in Chains was my favorite. Pearl Jam would come in second. Then Soundgarden, and then Nirvana. Now, and Nirvana had their hits, but I mean, god dang, man, when you're talking about Layne Staley,
yeah,
god dang, what a voice. Chris Cornell,
right? Yeah,
They just, you know, when they've left us, it's been a while now,
right,
for Layne. But anyway, and then due to you into Mad Season,
no,
that, I mean, like I said, you're not a grunge guy, but man,
right,
that album, I love that album. It'll really put you in a weird place. But we're going to a weird place.
We're gonna go into a very, very weird place. Yeah,
I was a big, huge metalhead guy. Hair metal, whatever they want to call it. I always got mad when people call it hair metal because it's almost like attitude era. Pro wrestlers, but I guess they use it to kind of define a period of time. Guys in music have always had an attitude, or they've always had hair.
Right.
But all of a sudden, that's hair metal.
But it's
an insult.
But no, actually, it's kind of different, though, because you got like the glam rock metal, right, where they have the big hair and
you're
the
right.
hair.
It's, but it's still time periods.
Right, absolutely.
Because they all got phased out at
right.
different times. And then, you know, when grunge came around, I don't know if these guys might be a little too poppy for you, but Firehouse was a hell of a damn band. And Firehouse, dude, they got band of the year.
Yeah,
they got a grunge band. So they gave the Heisman stiff arm to a grunge band.
Yeah,
when no one expected them to. So
right.
I got to give them props for that. But I was into a little bit harder stuff. That was the most more melodic stuff I was into. But when did you start playing drums?
Oh, I started playing drums. Jeez, I was in like the fifth grade or
dude,
something like that.
How do you keep
that
from speeding up? Because I always wanted to be in a rock band.
Right.
Couldn't sing, couldn't play guitar. My parents wouldn't buy me a drum kit because it makes too much noise. What's the deal about keeping a steady beat? Because you're basically the timing of the band. Right.
Well, I was kind of a band geek in school. You know?
Dude, I was too. I played tuba.
Yeah, right? And I played.
You don't learn shit playing don't tuba. Play,
yeah, right. But I played drum. I played drums. I picked up the snare drum. And, you know, you're keeping beat, but somebody else is keeping the beat for you, you know? And I didn't actually start playing like a drum kit until I kind of got into high school. And I kind of forced it on after my my dad passed at an early age. It was 12. My dad passed from viral and bilateral pneumonia. My life kind of went down a little bit from there. You know, you battle depression, you know, because your parent, you know, that's your time when you're growing up. You're growing up, you're becoming a man. You're learning how to shave. You're learning different things, you know? And you always kind of look to your dad to help you with those things. And I didn't have that. So I really buried myself into music and buried myself into playing the drums and buried myself into, you know, and I was a horrible kid. I'll be honest. I was a bad kid.
Troublemaker?
I don't know if it was just me rebelling or I didn't know how to express myself in a certain way, you know? So I was a bad kid. I didn't do well in school. My sister did my homework most of the time. And the only reason why I played, got through school was I played sports. And that's legit, you know? But I always had the drums to, I did it before, like it was popular on YouTube doing like drum covers and stuff like that. I would put my headphones on and I would play for hours, just hours playing, you know, and I still play somewhat to this day. I don't have a drum set. I live in an apartment, but every time I get a chance to get behind a drum set, absolutely. I'm going to sit there and play for a little bit, you know, cause I love it. You know?
How long did the band stuff last?
I played in a band. We played at the Whiskey Go-Go. We had a short contract with Jägermeister.
Good sponsor.
Yeah, Jäger was fun. The dad managed the band, and the guitar player was the dad was the guitar player. Dad, and we just didn't seem eye to eye very very much. And then wrestling kind of opened the door, so I was like, I kind of really want to do this. So I went through that.
Well, how old were you when you were in the band and playing the Whiskey Go Go?
I was 22.
Okay, 23? Were you all writing original stuff or doing covers?
No, we did a couple covers, a couple of Rage Against the Machine covers.
My favorite band of all time. You kind of waited out there. Now, when you acted like you were drumming a while ago, y'all couldn't see him because y'all listened.
Right.
I was thinking Megadeth, Metallica. I'm thinking Slayer.
Yeah.
You know?
I had a huge drum kit, man. Like, this thing was massive. Like, it barely fit on the riser at the Whiskey Go-Go. This thing racked completely around, 20 by 22-inch cannons on both sides. Snare, rack tom, two on the floor. Complete rack of cymbals around. And I love Shannon Larkin from Godsmack.
Dude. Yeah. And then the lead singer's name.
Sully.
Sully.
Yes.
Sully, we used to get back here and stand up and do some shit too. But my question is, what the fuck happened to them? Because, man, they were kicking ass.
They just came out with a new album.
Dude, they were on fire.
They're on tour right now.
The first two albums, they were on fire. And then I never heard from them again.
Well,
you've been more engaged than I have. I'm over here at 317 Gibbs Street. And I'm just lost.
Hanging out with with your Ford Focus out there, your four doors.
Too much wax.
Too much.
Wax on, wax off. Someone should write a movie about this.
That's right.
Godsmack is still around.
Still relevant. But
when they first came out, they popped it.
They
popped the territory.
Yes.
And then they kind of went down the card.
They lost their drummer.
Okay.
And then Shannon Larkin, one of my favorite drummers, because I love drummers. Tommy Lee. Love Tommy Lee. That are visual drummers. That when they're playing, they're throwing everything out there while they're playing. They're not just sitting behind the drum kit and just keeping a beat. They're throwing their arms. They're twirling sticks. They're throwing sticks. They're just having just a crazy time back there. And I love that about that. And I love that about Shannon Larkin. And he's like one of my top influence of drumming is watching him, because he'll sit there 1 minute. He's got one hand here. He's got the other one going around his head and he's hitting the cymbal here. And he's the triplets that he's hitting on the drums. And he's just going down the line and twirling sticks and throwing them. It's fun to watch.
Can you do all that?
I can twirl sticks and I can throw them. Yeah, I can play like that. Yeah, I haven't played like that in a hot minute. But I mean, it's like riding a bike. Once you get back there, you can.
On a 1 to 10, where would you put yourself?
A -2.
Very humble. Dude, you're supposed to be this competitive ass pro wrestler.
Yeah.
And a -2 on a drum?
I'm not going to put myself up there.
Please,
you know,
give yourself a 6.
All right. I'll take a 6.
Who you listen to currently?
I'm really big into Beartooth right now. They're a really awesome band. I like Bad Wolves, who just who is on tour with Five Finger Death Punch. They just did a cover of Zombie by the Cranberries. If you guys haven't listened to this, they also the lead singer of the Cranberries, her name is kind of blanking me right now, but she passed away right before she was supposed to go into the studio and do an audio track on their cover of Zombie. So what was so cool about them and what really got me into them was they took the proceeds that they got from doing the Zombie cover and they donated it to their family, which gets over with me huge, you know, so that, and they're just great. It's just a great album, you know, so.
Well, let's get back into the business of pro wrestling.
Yes.
Been on the road for 7 years.
Yeah.
Good times and bad times.
A lot of ups, a lot of downs. Yeah.
What about family? Married, divorced?
Married. Yeah. Married, 2 kids from 2 different women.
Are you still married?
I am married right now. Yes.
Okay.
Yep. 2 different women. Not 2 different. Yeah. I have 2 kids from 2 different women. I had my oldest from when I was 21. She is now 11, in the 6th grade. She's a nutball, man. I love my kids absolutely to death. And then when I was going through all my addiction problems and stuff like that is where, my second daughter came into play, with my ex-wife.
How old is she now?
She is 4.
Man, how they deal with you, being on the road? Because, man, I got 2 daughters. One is now 26, one is 19. And starting to, you know, visit more with my daughter that's 26. She's in L.A. here. But for a long time, they were over in England.
Right.
And, man, once I took off and got in the business of pro wrestling, man, I was gone. And when I came home, I was kind of still gone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so all these years later, and I always tell everybody, I've said this before on the podcast, I never won the Father of the Year award because I was always gone. And I was checked out. I mean, I made the decision to be in the business of pro wrestling, you know, and I could have made the same decision to be a truck driver and still been gone.
Yeah.
But I was kind of always gone. But anyway, I missed a lot of shit there, and I'm trying to make some of that shit up now as we speak. So you're living it right now. Where on the here and gone meter are you with your kids?
I try to be there as much as I can. One of my daughters, my youngest, lives in the Bay Area, so she lives about 3.5 hours away from me. But my oldest lives in town, about a mile away from me, honestly. So I try to be, you know, with the great thing about technology nowadays is you can FaceTime, text. You know, there's different ways, there's different avenues to get in there. And now I'm not saying that I'm Father of the Year any way, shape, and form. But I try to be there as much as I can for my kids, especially during the week, since I just travel on the weekends. When you different back in the day, you were traveling, you know, 300 out of 365, you know, I try to be there as much as I can for my kids. And especially when I was going through like my oldest knows more than anything. I'll start tearing up here in a minute with my addiction. She saw a lot of it. So,
yeah. What do they think about what you do? Because I'm sure that they're going to school and, you know, they're going home and, you know, for the most part, mom and dad's there.
Right.
You know, and these days, maybe not so much, but you're in a whole different line of work. And it's very different than someone who's working on a freight dock, driving a truck, or selling insurance. You go out there and you're Sledge, the metalhead maniac.
Right.
And then you come home and you're a dad with a funky haircut.
Right. And a long goatee, right.
Give it a goatee thing.
Yeah.
So, what, and the tats. So, and like, where are you on the normal scale of whatever is normal?
With my oldest, she loves telling her friends that dad's a pro wrestler. She loves it, you know. And I'm always, I try to be as involved, like I said, with my kids as much as possible. So when I'm, you know, it's hard to go to soccer games because I'm on the road on the weekends, you know, but if I know that I have a gig or, you know, later in the day and she's playing early, you know, I missed her first soccer game yesterday. Her first soccer game was yesterday. I missed it because I was on the road. it's cool for them to know that I'm a pro wrestler, but at the same time, though, is they would want dad home more, you know, but I'm doing this for them. You know, I'm doing this so they can have a better life, you know, maybe a life that I didn't have when I was a kid, you know, so that's why I'm doing it.
Man, that's a different answer. You know, I mean, when I got into business of pro wrestling, I did it for me.
Right.
I did it for me while I didn't have my kids in. But I got in the business and then had kids, but I was in it for me. And I was able to provide a living for them.
Absolutely.
Had I stayed at Watkins Motor Lines and went into management rather than driving a forklift and manual loading of freight and stuff like that, you know, I never thought about it like that. I was just like, man, I made a decision to do this. The road comes with it.
Yep.
So whoever's with me has got to deal with that. But, mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it was like, I'm selfish to me. I mean, speaking for me, as me. You know, I was all about the business.
I am all about the business, but I'm also about my kids too.
Yep. But you think you could have done, or you could do anything other than this to provide a better living for them?
I'm not a 9-to-5 guy, honestly. I had a 9-to-5.
Man, I've been 9-to-5. I've done it. I can do it. But to your point, yeah, man, I was good. As George Strait would sing an old, I don't know if it's a Lefty Frizzell song, Rhythm of the Road. I like to be on the road.
Yeah.
I like to be with the boys. I like to be in the ring. As much as I love my private time, I love being in front of a crowd.
Right. I was a cable guy. You know, when I was going through, you know, getting over my addiction and not getting booked places and doing this, I almost got blackballed from wrestling, like, because of my addiction. I was comfortable being having the dad bod and, you know, being the cable guy. And it was one of those things, man, where I was miserable inside. I'm watching all my friends, you know, big indie names now that I've wrestled, you know, doing what they're doing now. And I'm like, I could have been right there with them. You know,
if you took that first door opened up.
Yeah. If I would have took the first door that opened up, or I didn't get into the pain pills that I did, or get into the drinking that I did.
Keep in mind that while I'm sitting here flapping my gums, there's millions of skilled workers out there, construction workers or utility repairmen, who make their living as doers. Swig a beer for the working man. They keep the lights on, the roads paved, the water flowing. They're the unsung heroes who keep the world moving. In fact, this podcast might not even exist or get to your ears without skilled workers to provide the electricity and bandwidth for your laptops and devices. For all the doers out there, Timberland Pro has the Hypercharge work boot designed for optimal performance and comfort. These boots feature anti-fatigue technology to deliver underfoot comfort for long days on the job site. A composite safety toe powered by carbon shield technology. Stable stride technology to help keep you steady on uneven surfaces. Premium full-grain waterproof leather with a waterproof membrane. Breathable moisture-wicking lining and antimicrobial treatment for odor control. The Hypercharge work boot is a must-have boot for the hardworking doers out there. They're talkers and they're doers. Timberland Pro, always do, never done. And for all you doers out there, here's one more thing for you to do. Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right, save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today.
Make sure to stick around after this podcast to get the latest headlines from the AP News Minute.
Folks, the NBA season is right around the corner, so it's time to get in on the action with the official Lakers podcast right here on Podcast One Sportsnet. Join Emmy Award-winning sports reporter Susie Schuster and co-host Aaron Larsoul as they discuss the Lakers news of the day and break down the upcoming season with some of the biggest guests around, including recent interviews with Shaquille O'Neal, Magic Johnson, and LeBron James. Check out the official Lakers podcast each week exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. If you love the show, tell your friends and leave a rating and review. All right, folks, it's that time of the year, my producer Sean's favorite time of the year.
as the brand new WWE 2K19 is coming at you October 9th. You heard it directly from the voice of 2K19's My Player Mode, AJ Kirsch, right here on this podcast. This year's game is going to be wild. It's going to be off the charts. WWE 2K19 features a 2K showcase mode, reliving the incredible journey of WWE superstar Daniel Bryan, from the career-defining main event of WrestleMania 30 to his heartbreaking retirement to his triumphant return this year. The new 2K Towers, an intense gauntlet of matches with incredible stipulations, a loaded roster of over 200 WWE superstars, NXT favorites alongside legends and Hall of Famers, including yours truly, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and a My Career Mode featuring high stakes and divergent career paths as you battle your way to WWE glory, voiced by WWE superstars and my man, AJ Kirsch. Can't wait until October 9th to play the game? Hell, why don't you play 4 days early? Get over to WWE.2K.com to pre-order the WWE 2K19 Deluxe Edition and start playing tomorrow, October 5th. The WWE 2K19 Deluxe Edition is over $100 in value and features a copy of WWE 2K19. Access to pre-order bonus characters Ronda Rousey and Rey Mysterio, the WWE 2K19 Season Pass, and access to the Ric Flair Woo Edition. Bonus digital content including additional playable characters, the Starrcade 83 Arena, and more. And if all that ain't enough, you'll earn your right to play against cover superstar AJ Styles for the opportunity to win $1 million. Think you have what it takes? Visit WWE.2K.com/$1 million challenge for more information on how to enter. WWE 2K19, never say never.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
You said coming up as a kid, you were not a good kid.
No.
Okay. Was it crime, just not doing your homework, starting fights? I mean, what kind of bad kid would you say?
Well, I did get arrested when I was 18. I did 6 months in jail when I was 18. I have a clean record now. You know, I got it expunged. My dad worked for the federal government before he passed. My mother, now I don't really have a relationship with her because she works for the federal government. And when I got arrested, it was kind of like, can't help you. Sorry. You know, it was her career. You know, I was homeless on the streets after I got out of jail. Had nowhere to go. I went from that to, I called my sister. My sister saved my life.
How do you function on the streets? Shoot question. When you're homeless.
Yeah.
How long did that last? I mean, like, what are you doing for food, sustenance, shelter? Because we're right here in L.A., and, dude, there's a lot of homeless people in this area, so right. I see them every single day.
Yeah.
So, dude, how do you make ends meet? How do you feed yourself?
I lived in a shelter. I showered in a 24-hour fitness. I knew the guy who worked the night shift. I showered at a 24-hour fitness. But as being homeless and not having anywhere to go and pretty much the clothes on your back and a backpack, I still kept a job.
Gotcha.
You know, I still kept a job. But I was burying myself. I couldn't, you know, do anything. I couldn't get ahead of the game at all. And I called my sister. And she goes, where have you been?
How long had it been since you guys had talked?
Probably a year or so. Because I was in jail and I was in and out of trouble and whatnot.
Did she know you were in jail?
She knew I was in jail. Yeah, okay. She knew. She goes, where have you been? I'm like, I'm on the streets. Like, I tried to call mom. She hung up the phone on me, told me nothing I could do.
Get emotional. It's all right, man.
She bussed me from Oxnard, California, all the way to Frisco to rehabilitate my life, to help me get back on track. That's where the MMA route kind of came about. And then I was still a shithead to her, honestly. I was, because I still had the jail mentality and I still had the homeless mentality in my head.
But up until this point, you were just, you know, a troubled kid. Lost your dad at 12, no guidance. But you weren't into drugs yet.
Not into drugs yet, no.
Okay, so we haven't got there
yet. Yeah, I got.
I'm assuming that's coming with the road.
It's coming with the road, yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
So tell me about how did you get into the MMA thing?
I saw Ultimate Fighter Season 1, and I met my first kid's mom. She was up there on a business trip.
I'm trying to put a timeline on that. That was give or take, what, 12, 13 years ago?
Yeah, give or take.
14, something?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, she kept coming up.
seeing me, I didn't have a car, I didn't have money. You know, I just gradually met her on Pier 39. I was working a job at like a magic carpet ride where it was like a green screen and they would get on all drunk and I would sit there and run them through it, you know, and met her. And she's like, hey, one of two things is going to happen. She goes, you're going to move down to San Luis Obispo where I currently live now, or we're going to end this.
Wow.
I had nothing keeping me in San Francisco and I kind of wanted to be back closer to home because I'm from Lompoc, which is about an hour away. I literally packed up my stuff, which was a bag and some stuff, and moved down to San Luis Obispo.
And but how long did it take you to come up with, you got one option. How long did it take you to come up with, hey, I'm going?
Within a minute or so.
Okay.
My sister actually was in like Vegas, I want to say, and I called her. I was like, hey, I'm moving. And she threatened to kick me out a couple of times because I was such a shithead and I had that bad mentality. She's like, you got to go.
What was it, like his attitude you had?
Yeah, I had a chip on my shoulder, man. Okay. Like a gnarly chip on my shoulder. Like, no one can tell me anything. I know the best. I know everything. You know, screw the world. You know.
Were you a bully? Because you're a big physical dude.
I don't want to say I was a bully. I was bullied a lot when I was a kid. But
you probably didn't know no one to fuck with you.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. You know, I didn't hit my growth spurt until I hit high school. Right. I was bullied a lot. I was a short, fat kid in school.
But now you've got this attitude.
Yeah, I got this attitude. I got this gym, you know, I got this, you know, this don't fuck with me attitude. And it was move here. And she knew, you know, Chuck Liddell. She partied with Chuck and she's hung out with Chuck and so on and so forth. And kind of got me into the MMA world. I came from an amateur wrestling background. You know, kind of got into the MMA world. I was like, I could do this. Absolutely. For sure. Like, get the anger out. Let's do this. I didn't go through the pit, you know. I went through a kickboxing company called the Buderoo and trained under Crew Albert and had some amateur fights. Then I went over to the pit and did some work with Cruz Gomez and the pit boys over there. And it was just one of those things, man, where it's like it's crazy with how life transitions you, you know, MMA started going and then like the band thing started kind of coming up and then I was having bad management in the MMA world, you know? So it was like, okay, go back to playing drums again and performing or keep getting my face punched in, you know, let's go with the band route.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You know, let's not get my face punched in anymore. Then the band thing happened. And while I was in, I'll transition back to when I was in Frisco, when the first door opened for to go into pro wrestling. Beyond the Mat hit. And I knew about Beyond the Mat when I was a kid. APW, Hayward, California. I emailed APW Garage. And because they had this tryout thing. And I emailed them. And within like, I want to say 10 minutes, I got a call from Roland Alexander. Crazy. Blew my mind. I was like, holy crap, I'm talking to Roland Alexander from Beyond the Mat. I don't even think I've told you this, AJ. Yeah. You know.
Who's Roland Alexander?
Roland Alexander was the creator of APW.
Okay.
Yeah. The creator of All Pro Wrestling.
But how was he associated with Beyond the Mat?
They did the filming with Beyond the Mat. I don't know exactly. Maybe you know. I don't know exactly how. I'm going to kind of shoot that one over to AJ because I don't know exactly how that became because I wasn't in the business. I was still a kid.
Because we're talking about the wrestling documentary, which
yes.
basically featured Jake the Snake Roberts and Mick Foley. Right.
Well, they also highlighted two independent workers in Mike Modest and Tony Jones
right.
who were getting a look from the WWF at the time. And Roland Alexander was the... owner and promoter of All Pro Wrestling, which was kind of like Mike and Tony's home promotion. So when they got their look, Roland went with them to the tryout.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he said,
I'm going to rewatch that.
I'm going to rewatch that.
Yeah.
What wrestler do you think you look like? And I had a shaved head and a little slit down the middle. Okay. I don't know if you know where I'm going with this one, but Batista. Okay. Yep. They called me within like 10 minutes. I wasn't jacked like Batista, you know, like Dave is, but like, and he goes, come down, let's talk. I said, okay. At that time, I didn't go down and talk to them because I talked to my girlfriend at the time, my first kid's mom, told her what I wanted to do. She laughed literally in my face, said, "You'll never do this, ever. You need to get a job." You know? And I let the door close. Luckily, I've wrestled for ABW, and luckily I was there at Roland Alexander, because Roland has passed. Luckily I was at his tribute show, and I was able to wrestle on his tribute show. So I did, you know, that's how me and AJ met, was at APW. So I gradually kind of came back to ABW. So kind of go through the band thing, and then the door, my buddy, I won tickets on like the radio show for Vendetta Pro Wrestling. I couldn't go because I had a band gig, so I gave them to a buddy of mine. My buddy goes, "Dude, they have a school and you need to go. Bottom line, you need to go." I was like, "All right, cool." And I was doing like promotion for like a nightclub too. And I was like, "Are they like on the road? Like, what are they doing?" You know, kind of the band thing starting to kind of come to an end, because I'm getting into, you know, four dudes in a car, you know, it's kind of rough, you know? He goes, "Dude, like, contact Billy Blade. Here's his number. I've already talked to him for you." Oh, thanks, man. So I contact him. We talk. I go, "I kind of want to put on a show at a place called The Graduate in San Luis Obispo. You know, I want to put in, you know," and he's like, "Yeah, you know." So he brought in Gangrel for the first show. And I was like, "If I put this show on for you, I want free wrestling training." And he goes, "Okay, cool." So the door opened again into pro wrestling. And when a door opens for the second time, you got to go through it. You got to see what's there. And I went through it, man, and it's been crazy. Absolutely nuts.
How long did it take you to catch on to the business?
I think fairly quickly. I'm still learning to this day. You know, if you're a pro wrestler and you say you're not learning, then you're absolutely, you got your head fully up your ass.
Yeah. I would say up until I retired and wrestled my last match, I was still learning stuff.
Absolutely. You know, you're always still learning. I'm still learning to this day.
But I would imagine with your amateur training, with your MMA training, you caught on with the mechanics probably at a pretty rapid pace.
Yeah.
How you did with the psychology?
It was a little rough here and there to learn, but I think that's, I call it, you know, studying a lot. And I don't just watch WWE. I watch New Japan. I watch ROH. I watch a lot of stuff on the indies, you know, seeing what they're doing. I'll just put on YouTube and just watch like a match. You know, something where I'm like, "Oh man, that would be awesome." Like, I was watching, I did the New Japan camp out here just, right before I head to England and train under Shibata-san. And I was like,
Who?
Shibata?
Oh, I thought Rocky Romero ran that.
No, Shibata is the head trainer over there with, Scorpio Sky.
Okay.
Yeah. And, Shibata versus Matt Riddle. Brother. Clinic. Absolute clinic. You know, and they, you know, I would put on stuff like that, you know. So gradually learning, you know, the psychology through watching, you know, WWE, and then gradually just getting into it. And then the Ballards had a whole lot of help. Having great mentors in the business has helped me a lot. Like AJ, like Gangrel, Simbodi, you know, Masada, you know, guys like that, you know.
Dude, what happened to Gangrel? I always thought that was one of the best gimmicks I'd ever seen. And when they had the Brood and those guys come out of stage like that, and he had that white shirt on, that damn goblet,
yeah.
It was the sharp teeth. I mean, visually. And plus, Duke could work his ass off.
Yeah, he's still working.
I know. I know he's still around, but I just don't know why they got the short end of the stick, or, you know, what, I don't know if it's something to do with Luna. God rest her soul.
Yeah, God rest.
Close
yeah.
to her. Or what happened? Is that dude doing okay?
He's doing great. He running the Asylum, Gangrel's Wrestling Asylum out of Florida. He's going to be here in L.A., I want to say, for Blackcraft, which is going to be in Anaheim on October 5th. And I will be at that show as well. He's still around, man. He's still doing it. He's great.
Well, I gotta yell at that guy. We'll get back to you. Yeah. So you're in the business. You get the mechanics down. You got the psychology down. You started getting them down the road. Now, with your trouble past, you're not a great kid. You lost your father at 12. You've been around. You're a rock man. You're in MMA. Yeah, you're in the pro wrestling.
I've lived on the road.
But you've been homeless.
Yeah.
But you've been drug free, right?
Drug free.
Okay. All of a sudden, you get in the business of pro wrestling. What happens?
I got hurt. I had two discs in my lower back, my L4 and my L5. I still don't have full feeling in my left leg. That's pushed on my sciatic. I have about 75 to 80%, but I still have numbness like on the back of my leg and down toward the bottom of my foot. We were drunk one night, and it says, I landed on a beer can standing straight up. went right in the middle of my back. I was already kind of having back problems as it was. That kind of escalated it. I had to wrestle the next day. I wrestled the next day. A couple weeks pass. I'm in a match. I go to pick up. I used to use the pump handle slam. Full pump handle. Pick him up on the shoulder, slam him down. Guy goes up heavy. Back goes pop, pop, crack, crack. I barely slam him. I barely protect him. And like, I grab like his knee pad to cover him. I go, we're going home right now. Like, I can't move.
You're done.
I'm done. I can't move. I call my wife at the time. And I'm driving home too. Cause I can't get out of the car. I need you to get in the car.
And dude, that's a weird place when all of a sudden you're able to get into a car because you're still a little bit warm and all of a sudden everything gets cold.
Yeah.
And if you've never been in this situation, which I have been in that same kind of deal with the same amount of pain, that lower back pain or whatever, you cannot move.
Can't.
Because if you try, it is like someone is sticking the damnedest knife, dagger, whatever you want to call it, in that particular part of your body. It is just unbearable.
Yeah. And I called her. I woke her up at the middle of the night. Good thing I was wrestling fairly close to home. It was about an hour drive, nothing too major. I called her. I go, I need you to get in the car. I can't move. I can't get in the passenger seat. And we need to go to the hospital. She goes, okay. She goes, what happened? I go, my back. I can't feel my left leg. I can't feel really anything from the waist down. We I need help. So she gets in the car, we get to the hospital. They pull me, like, the crazy part is, like, my wife had to, the wife at the time had to pull me out of the car because they wouldn't touch me. The hospital wouldn't, the nurses or the security guy wouldn't touch me. They're like, we're not going to be liable for that, hell no.
Right.
You know? So she had to literally pull me out of the car. She's maybe like $160, you know, at the most, you know? Pulling me out of the car and putting me in a wheelchair and wheeling me into the in. Doc took a few x-rays of my back. He says, your discs are jacked. He goes, I don't think you should wrestle anymore. Honestly. He goes, your discs are done. And I go, nah, man, like, that's not going to happen. You know, so feeding pain pills.
Well, how old were you?
26, 25, 26, I want to say.
Yeah, when you're 25, 26, someone tells you can't do something.
Yeah.
You still want to do it.
Yeah, I still want to do it. I'm still fresh. I'm still green. Like, still, like, this is fairly.
So what
I'm only like 2 years in.
So he writes you a script.
Yep, for Norco. I run out of the script. I start buying them illegally. I got a buddy who hooks me up with somas. You know, start getting into the somas.
Okay, now why did you get into the somas? Because somas aren't a part of the pain protocol.
It was.
I mean, you could, in theory, say, well, they're a muscle relaxer, yeah. So they're providing relief.
Absolutely.
So
yeah, that's pretty much it. I was popping anything to help me get out of pain and keep wrestling, honestly.
Did you do the Vike Soma combination?
I did never do the Vike Soma combination, but I did the Norco Soma combination, and I took two Norcos before a match, and We'll get into where my career almost crashed and burned.
Right. No, just that was, man, yeah. I was at a bar one time with a guy having a couple of beers. Hey, man, you got anything? No. What do you mean? You know, and, you know, I've been around a few pain pills back in the day.
Right.
I remember riding one of my first shots out of the state of Texas, riding a shot in Oklahoma. Person I'm riding with, hey, man, you want a bike? I'm like, what's a bike? That's a pain pill. What for? I just a buzz.
Yeah.
Okay, it's E1.
Right.
Okay, that was my first pain pill. That was my introduction. I'd already played 2 years of JUCO football, 2 years of football at North Texas State University, blew out my ACL, you know, linebacker, defensive end.
Right.
I've been in pain, but just never had anything to do with a pain pill. I'm riding down the road, and someone just asks if I want one for no reason.
Right.
So anyway, back to the conversation we're at the beer joint. Hey, man, two somas, two Vikes. Oh, dude, the feeling came over me, and I was, like, scared shitless. I said, this is not a feeling that I know is conducive to a long life, and never, ever took that combination again. And so anyway, back to you. You're taking Norcos. Here's some Vikes, some somas.
Yep. Alcohol is involved as well.
Now, when did you start drinking?
I started drinking when I was young. Like, I've always loved alcohol. Like, alcohol was always one of those things that was always like, hey, we're partying, we're having fun. Like, when I'm touring with the band, you know, we're drinking before the show. It was always been a part of my life. Like, alcohol has always been a part of my life. So when you mix those two combinations together...
Exaggerated effects.
Yeah, and usually somehow a car crash happens. Mm-hmm. I'm getting in fights multiple times with a promoter who I came from, Vendetta Pro Wrestling. My wife at the time, I was living the rock star life. I'm on the road, I'm drinking, I'm partying, girls, you name it, you know? And she got tired of it really quick. She's like, hey, it's me or the road, you know? Went to Vegas one time. Partying, yada, yada, yada. Come home, she's gone. Newborn, gone. You know? I'm in a pretty dark place now. My wife now is gone. My newborn's gone. My daughter, my oldest, doesn't want to be around me because she sees how strung out dad is. You know? I never drank around her, though.
Okay, but how strung out were you?
I was strung out to the point of I didn't want to get off the couch. But she never saw me drink. That was one thing she never saw me do. Was she's never, and to this day, she's never seen me take a drink of alcohol.
But what was the escalation of pills?
They were in my underwear drawer, and I had bottles. And I was before it was so bad, Steve. To be honest with you, I would have to take because I was working a shoot job. I would have to take a pill and a shot before I went to work. That's how bad I was. I would throw up in the shower every single morning.
Because you needed a
because I needed yeah because I was so strung out.
How many were you going through a day? Because I've talked to from Dale Wilkes talking 60 Vicks or 60 Perks a day. I mean numbers that I can't even comprehend. But not, shoot numbers.
Nothing to the extreme of 30 or 40, but anywhere from like 10 to 12. You know, and the Norcos. The thing
to
about
me, that's a shit pile.
Yeah. To the thing about Norcos though is they're more uppers than they are downers.
Right.
You know, so it was. Keeping up,
yep.
Keeping up. And then I'm partying at night, you know, drinking. My kid's in bed, fucking, you know, doing whatever it is I'm doing, you know. I'm going into, and we had a great program too. Holy shit. Me and my best friend, we were going into a program of, he does death matches. He's known for being a death match. He's retired now, but he's known for going into death matches. And we were going into a program.
You talking about Danzig? I mean, talking about Zandig?
No. His name's JD Horror.
Okay.
Best friend in the absolute world. I mean, we started as a tag team. We have the same tattoo on our chest. It's what we are, man. We're best friends. We're getting ready to go into a program with him. We're breaking up our tag team. I'm turning heel. We're gonna go into a death match. Never done one before. And we're going to start, you know, we're going to get into some crazy shit. The night before I went out drinking and partying and doing what I'm doing, I get to his house to start drinking. I'm popping pain pills. I'm doing the whole nine. I know that I'm going into a shit storm later. So I'm drinking a little bit more heavy. I shouldn't have walked out that curtain, Steve, honestly. I was blacked out drunk.
I'll do this before the show.
This is before the show. No, this is before the show. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely. I walked out that curtain and drunk as shit, blacked out, get into this match. I can barely stand. I can barely do anything. I've seen the video. The video's online. Like, I'm an open book. Like, the video's online. I think I told this kid in the front row that I was going to beat her for some strange apparent reason. I think I threw a ladder at somebody. Like, it was just absolute chaos because I was so blacked out of my mind. And
what did your buddy think?
He tried to carry me as much as he could. He tried to carry me as much as he could, but he knew.
What was he talking to you backstage? Like, dude, you need to slow down.
He tried to, but I was like, I'm fine. Gotcha. I'm fine. You know, you do the, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'll douse myself with water and we'll go, you know. And I was so, the next day, I get into a fight with the promoter backstage before I leave. I'm on the mic cutting this ridiculous promo. Just, I can't even like. Talk like blah 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 blah, you know. They cut my mic, they drag me out of the ring. I'm in the back, I'm getting ready to fight the promoter, you know, because we're already at battles as it was, and now it just kind of
I'm drunk and stupor, and now everything's kind of came into fruition, and we're getting ready to get into it. The next day, man, holy shit. I'm scarred up. I'm beat to shit. I'm taking pills. It's crazy, man, because I had a friend come over, clean up my wounds. You know, I'm still pulling tacks on my head because I just passed out. I was done. I passed out. I got home. Like, I literally got dragged into my house and I passed out. So I wake up the next morning. I'm still fucked up. I still got tacks in my head, you know, and I have a friend come over and clean my back and clean my wounds and all this shit. And it was just, and you're still popping pills and you're still drinking. And it kind of dawns on you what the fuck happened. Like, fuck. Like, did I fuck up really that bad? Like, holy shit. No one's returning my text messages. No one's, my buddy, who's my best friend in the freaking world, not answering my phone calls. I literally shit the bed. Like, literally shit the bed. He calls me a couple days later, and I'm sitting at home, and I got a beer in my hand. I'm sitting, watching my TV. I go, dude, where you been? What's going on? He goes, I need to talk to you, straight up. We need to talk. And I go, okay. He goes, you're fucked up. He goes, I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you. You're fucked up. You have a problem. You need help. And I go, I got a beer in my hand. I got a Coors Light in my hand, right? Sitting there watching my big screen TV. I'm alone in my house. No one's in my house. My kids aren't around. My wife's gone. My kids are gone. I think I was living with a roommate at the time. He's gone. Like, you're in that dark place, man, where you're alone and you get inside your thoughts. You can get some fucked up ideas in your mind. And he goes, you need help. You're fucked up. And you think to yourself, he goes, why do you think I haven't called you? I was like, yeah, dude, no one's returning my text messages. No one's calling me. Nothing, man. And he goes, it's because you're fucked up and no one wants to be around you. He goes, I'm being straight, 100% honest. I don't want to be around you and you're my best friend. You need help. You need to get help. So I go, all right, man. You know, it's crazy, like that switch in your head. You know, you have to do it for yourself. You know, or somebody to paint you the picture of, dude, you're fucked up. You need help. And then you realize, maybe I am fucked up. Maybe I do need help. So I take the beer in my hand. I put them on FaceTime. Take it, and I dump it down the sink. While I'm on FaceTime with him, I grab all my booze out of my house, and I'm dumping it down the sink. Take them upstairs into my drawer, take all my pain pills, and I dump them down the toilet. I tell him, dude, just check on me. I said, I'm going to fucking do what I can to detox. Like, I didn't go to NA. I didn't go to AA. I didn't do any of that. It was mind over matter. It was, I'm going to get better. I need to get better because I want my friends back. I want my life back. He checked on me every single day to make sure I was still alive. I took a week off work. I said, I need help. I'm going to get help. I need to detox because my work knew I was fucked up. They knew I was fucked up. The HR lady, we were super cool. We were drinking partners, but she knew I was fucked up. She knew I was bad. And I haven't looked back. I've been 4 years clean now. I just passed my 4-year mark in August.
What are you thinking when you're dumping all your stash down the damn toilet and you poured out all your alcohol? You didn't keep a little kayfabe stash?
No. No.
Hey, man, here's the, if I can't make it, I got this.
No.
There was no plan.
There was no plan B. It was all in.
How long did it take before you felt normal, or was there heavy duty withdrawals? What was the ramifications of stopping and going cold turkey?
Fuck, it was rough, Steve. And that's one of the things that really like makes me not want to pick up the bottle again or not pick up a pill again, because it's a feeling that you can't describe. It's one of those feelings that you have to feel. And any addict, because I know there's probably addicts that listen to your podcast, you always can stop. There's always another road you can do. There's always something better on the other side of addiction. Because addiction is a bitch. I battle it every single day. No doubt about it. When I'm out hanging out with people, or after a show and people want me to go to the bars and hang out or anything, there's always some kind of alcohol involved. And I started out with drinking before I ended up with pills. I always want to take that that drink. Maybe I have 4 years clean. Maybe I can control it. But I remember how bad I felt, Steve. Honestly, I felt like shit. And I never, ever want to feel that way again. Ever. I see people the next day, they're drinking, they're partying, they're fucking hungover. And I go, you feel like shit, don't you? Why? Why do you feel like shit? You did that to yourself. You self-inflicted yourself to feel like shit. I never want to feel that again, ever.
How do you pass the time on the road now without, I mean, you've been 4 years clean, so obviously now you're no stranger to it, but I would imagine every day is its own battle.
Absolutely.
And idle hands at the devil's workshop, and there's a lot of time on your hands, and guys, you know, riding down the road, man, you know, shit, me and Billy Gunn chewing tobacco, chewing skull, whatever, just spitting in a can.
Yep.
There's something to do to pass time. You get to the show, you're drinking coffee.
Yep.
You're going through a routine.
That's my routine.
You know, and, you know, same thing. You know, you get from a show, you're on an adrenaline spike. Oh, you start drinking a beer, you kind of come down. Hey, a couple of gimmicks, get back up.
Right.
Vicious cycle. In your case, you took the cycle too far, and now it's the monster. But now you're still trying to, you know, thrive on the road. You're still in the system. You're still up and down the road. I was a huge Stevie Ray Vaughan fan. And, you know, he got so bad off coke and everything like that, dude. He finally cleaned up and he started making music clean again and living life as a clean person. And it was like that come to Jesus. I mean, I think they were on a tour in England and he started throwing up blood.
Yeah.
Because he'd always do like a shot of whiskey with some coke in it.
Right.
And that was kind of his go-to thing. So when you're on the road these days, man, how close does temptation get to you? How do you give it the Heisman stiff arm or just maintain what you're doing?
I keep myself out of those situations. Honestly,
how so?
I don't go to after parties. Very rarely you'll see me at an after party. If there's an after party, very, very rarely. And if it is, it's coming in to say hello to people, and then I leave. I love going to Vegas. I love Vegas. Alcohol's huge in Vegas. Everything's huge in Vegas. If I'm in a situation where I drink cranberry and soda water, makes it look like I'm drinking, makes it look like I'm with the party. But I'm not with the party.
But also it gives you something to do.
Exactly.
There's your prop.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely. Or I chew tobacco like a mother. I do. And that is another thing is I chew. And that helps me because you have to constantly – it's something in your hands, like grabbing a water bottle, something right along those lines of keeping busy.
Yep.
You know, especially with around people. And I get very nervous in large crowds. Very nervous and large. I can perform in front of a large crowd, absolutely, and have fun. But when I'm at like in slow at like a farmer's market, oof, I'm like in like a little box. I get anxiety so bad. I don't like being bumped into. I don't like being, you know, I don't like being touched to a point. So yeah, it's very, I just keep myself out of those situations. And if NA works for you, for any addict, if NA works for you, go to NA. Do it. If AA works for you, do it. But I believe the mind is such a powerful thing. It's mind over matter. You can do anything you set your mind to it. Anything. I never thought I would wrestle again. Ever. I never thought that a promoter would look at me again. Because all that footage that I told you about ended up on the internet. And got sent to 80 different promoters saying not to book me. And people that had me on shows contact me, tell me, we can't use you. Like, no, we're not going to do that, you know, and from gaining, you know, a bunch of weight to not wrestling maybe once a month, if I'm lucky, once every 2 months to, you know, going through the weight loss that I did, because now I went from 320 pounds of pure fat, dad bod, working for the cable company, you know, being a linesman, hating life. To now I'm around 220. You know, I have a pretty decent physique on me. I don't say I'm like a body guy, but I can go, you know. And it was all over mind over matter.
What'd you do to drop the weight?
Diet. Diet's huge. And contacting AJ. Because AJ, if you haven't seen him, he's kind of chiseled, you know.
But when you got on a diet, did you drop the alcohol?
I stopped the alcohol before I even got on the diet. Okay. Yeah, I was already... I've been back, I want to say like back in the indie scene of being that I'm not quite an indie darling yet, but if you want to book me, Sledge, you know, 805 or contact me on Facebook, where was I going with that?
We're dropping weight.
Dropping weight. Sorry about that. It was, hey, it was honestly, it was my wife now, you know, she goes, hey, you miserable fuck. She goes, if this is what you want to do, because I'm still watching wrestling on TV. I'm still watching the indies. I'm still watching all this shit. And she goes, you're good at what you do because you love what you do. Get off your fucking ass and do it. She goes, I'm buying you a gym membership for Christmas. She goes, get your ass back in the gym and do it. And I was all like, I contacted AJ. I go, brother, we're getting into it. And he goes, and I sent him, like, literally, it would probably be a little weird to anybody, but I sent him, like, progress pictures, you know, of it. And it took me about a year to drop the weight and to put on the muscle, but it was mind over matter. It's, if there's a will, there's a way. If you want something bad enough, the only one that's going to stop you from getting it is you. Honestly, if there's something bad enough you want, it was crazy because Cody said something cool after the all-in program. The Young Bucks went from undesirable to undeniable. I am going to go from undesirable to undeniable, and that sticks in my head. After he said that, I said, "Hell yeah!" Because that's what I'm going to do. I am going to go from undesirable to undeniable.
The fall's most kick-ass new drama is about to kick off Wednesday, October 10th, as the highly anticipated new series All-American premieres on the CW. Suspense and superhero mastermind Greg Berlanti, producer of massive hits like Riverdale and Black Lightning, is about to bring his winning touch to the sports genre as well. Inspired by local football hero Spencer Paysinger, All-American is about a high school football phenom from South Central who gets recruited to play in Beverly Hills. Tay Diggs crushes it as Beverly High football coach Billy Baker, a former star player in his own right who sees himself in Spencer. Coming off two losing seasons, he also sees Spencer as his ticket to job security. Billy promises Spencer the chance to someday go pro and give his family a better life. The relationship between a coach and player who each have everything to lose is a driving force behind some intense drama, both good and bad. All-American is a league of its own, and that's the bottom line. Catch a series premiere of All American Wednesday, October 10th on the CW.
You want to touch on the WWE tryout?
Talk to me about the WWE tryout.
So as I was hot and whatnot, I got contacted by the WWE. By the way, you get that phone call from WWE saying you want to do extra work. You're like, shit, like, hell yeah. You know, I missed a phone call, by the way. I called him back, you know, because I was talking to Austin Draven, who was under contract with NXT, who is now Luchasaurus on Lucha Underground. I go, hey, man, I got a call from this number. He goes, call him back right now. Call him back right now. And I was like, all right, call him back. They're like, WWE headquarters, you know, or whatever they say. I go, yeah, I have a missed call from you guys. And they're like, well, what's your name? And I tell them my name. They're like, yeah, we want to invite you to Raw and SmackDown, yada, yada, yada. I was like, oh, hell yeah. I was like, hey, what do I wear? They're like, a suit. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Within, I want to say maybe 10, 15 minutes, I got an email from Canyon saying we want to try you out. And this is when the Performance Center first opened back in 2013. I think I was the first tryout in the Performance Center with Bill DeMott. You ever had something in your hand? I'll tell you this. It's the golden ticket. You have the golden ticket. You have everything anybody wants. They're flying you to fucking Florida to try you out on their dime, putting you up in a hotel. And you're there with the elite. You're there with Eddie Edwards. You're there with Davey Richards. You're there with, I want to say Keith Lee was there before he got signed. You know, you're there with Joey Ryan. You're there with the top indie guys. They want to see you. And you just flush it down the toilet.
What happened?
I was so fucked up, Steve. I came in out of shape. I came in hurt. I was fucked up on pain pills. Fucked up on alcohol. Yeah. I took the golden ticket and I ripped it up. I never thought I would ever hear from the WWE again. Ever. And now this past year, I've done extra work for them twice now. And hopefully doing it again when they come back for Survivor Series, you know, this time. And I got to be in the conga line, you know, with No Way Jose. I never thought I would ever be back in that situation. But if you want it bad enough, you can get it. You know, if you want something so bad and you believe that you can do it, you can do anything.
So what do you got your mindset on now? What do you believe that you want to do, believe that you can do, and want to attain?
I want to wrestle around the world.
Bottom line, I want to wrestle around the world. I don't. WWE would be great. I'm 32 years old.
Are you still a youngster?
I'm still a youngster, right? WWE would be great. And I guarantee you, if I got another trial with WWE, I would go in there and dominate that son of a bitch. Honestly, I'm in the best shape I've ever been in right now. I can go. You put me in an Iron Man match right now for an hour, we can go for two. I'm literally in that great of shape. I would go in there. You know, I just want to wrestle around the world. I want to wrestle the top guys. I want to wrestle around the world. And I just want to live life. That's it, man. Just live life and be able to provide for my kids. If I get that contract, cool.
Where are you at right now? You happy?
I want more. I'm never happy. I want more.
Were you happy when you were on the pills and all the bullshit, or were you miserable?
Miserable as fuck. Miserable.
Depressed?
Depressed. Absolutely. Depression's a bitch. Absolutely.
But are you still depressed?
I don't want to say I'm depressed because I still battle depression and I still battle anxiety and addiction and like anybody else. Like everybody battles something. No one's perfect. If you say you're perfect, you're fucking lying. No one's perfect. Everybody has a dark past. You have one. AJ probably has one. I have one. The guy down the street probably has one. But it's how you deal with it, honestly, and what you're going to do to better yourself today and what you're going to do to better yourself tomorrow is the way you go about things. And that's the way I look at life. What can I do to better myself today and what I can do to better myself tomorrow and my family? And if that's me wrestling on a Tuesday night to get that paycheck, absolutely. That means wrestling for this person because they're paying me, but this person doesn't want me to work for this person because he has heat with this person, I don't give two shits because that person right there is not paying my bills. I'm not under contract with anybody. I'm a free agent. And I'll wrestle for anybody as long as it pays right because this is a business. It's a wrestling business. The minute you start looking at this as not a wrestling business is the minute you might want to get out of the business. This is a business. I have merchandise. I have gimmicks, as people call them. I'm all over social media. And anywhere you look at, you know, at a show I'm at, I'm selling my stuff and I'm coming in with a price. And now I'm not a high price, but I'm a price.
You got to have a price.
Absolutely.
But it sounded like early on in your career, you was in for the ride because you want to be a pro wrestler.
Absolutely.
And you missed the business aspect of it.
Yeah.
Now you know you must be professional, not just to be a professional wrestler or sports entertainer, but because it is your profession.
Yes.
And you're trying to get more business and to grow the business.
Absolutely.
You are your own commodity. Dude, I wish you all the luck in the world. Hey, WWE, if you listen to my podcast, Sledge the Metalhead Maniac wants to try it again. You gave him a look one time. Look him up again. He says he'll run circles around anybody you got down there. And that's the bottom line, because Sledge said so.
Damn right.
You down with that?
I'm down with that. Absolutely.
I enjoyed talking to you. Congratulations on getting cleaned up.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, it's a blast talking to you. And it's good to talk to a fellow metalhead. I didn't want to blow my cover with the Firehouse reference.
Ah.
Dude, all the hell. I worked security for Slayer way back in the day. It was about 1989 or 90 in Dallas, Texas at the Metroplex Arena when I was in a tag team with Rod Price and Gary Hart was he started the company and they needed a couple of big guys just kind of walk around and it was, I don't know, it was the Seasons of the Abyss tour or whatever. But I mean, you know, they had this fucking, you know, wicked ass steel presence.
Yeah.
The old Slayer
fucking
thing.
Fucking Slayer.
You know, my girlfriend at the time was just totally creeped out. She couldn't believe, you know, it was like all this death and destruction. It was a blast.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've been down a really interesting road. And I got a guy that I emailed, Rod, who lay down there in Canada, listened to the show. He was an addiction specialist. Mm-hmm. I know he's going to enjoy listening to you talk and hear you talk. And what is NA?
NA is Narcotics Anonymous.
Okay, I didn't know there was an NA.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's NA and there's AA for okay. Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous. And if that's the way, like I said, if that's the way that you have to go and you have to program to help with your addiction, do it. You know, and if you ever think, and honestly, I've had sick thoughts in my head. I've had suicidal thoughts. I've had, you know, you name it. you know, to the, having a pistol in my hand, Steve, thinking this world would be better without me. You're wrong. There's somebody out there that always loves you. There's always somebody out there that cares for you. There's always somebody out there that will drop what they're doing to help you. But you want it to get help, you want to be able to help yourself because it starts with you. If you want to get help because there's always avenues out there to get help.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This week, it's all about survival, and Rob's sister Nino is here to help. Check out Rob Has a Podcast as he kicks off a new season of Survivor.
And I guess you can go from a, you were almost a David, but you're back to a dud. But you cannot go from a Goliath to a David. Impossible!
You don't want to miss this. Check out Rob Has a Podcast every week on Podcast One or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, everybody, give me the go-home cues. Time to wrap up his podcast, Ride Off in the Sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank Brian Sledge, the Metalhead Maniac, on Twitter, at Sledge805, for coming on to the show and sharing his story of trials and tribulation and business of pro wrestling, life growing up, and coming out of addiction, and some very inspirational words from a guy who has been there and done that and is sober. And I'm proud to meet the guy, happy for his story. And I hope that if you're in a bad place, that his story, his words could motivate you. Please give me some feedback, questions at steveaustinshow.com if you choose to write in. I ain't got no new gear, so I ain't going to go into that shit. But I will tell you about this badass beer that I've been brewing. We're coming up on 3 years of brewing Broken Skull IPA. 3 years in November. We dropped that beer in 2015. Lots of research, lots of taste buds, lots of hard work and pride went into brewing the best IPA in the United States of America. You damn right, red, white, and blue, man. That's what Broken Skull IPA is all about. El Segundo Brewing Company brewed this stuff up. It's the best damn IPA in America, bottom line. Find it at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in Cali. If you ain't in Cali, you might be shit out of luck. Hey, if you're stopping by L.A., you got business to take care of, you fly into LAX, hang a left, go 4 miles, go to the brewery at 140 Main Street, pick up a couple bottles, grab you some draft right out of the damn keg. If you're looking to get a badass pocket knife, which I highly suggest everybody should have, Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife. Cold Steel Working Man's Knife. At my new Amazon store. Amazon got the best price on both knives. Just go to amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin or just head right directly over to Cold Steel Knives and check out all their badass shit. I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially betonline.ag, Timberland Pro, Geico, WWE 2K19, and the CW. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. If you need more info on my sponsors, check out the show description to this episode for details. Folks, I am on social media. Don't follow an imposter. I'm at Steve Austin BSR on both of them, Twitter and Instagram. Folks, until next time, I got Brian Cage coming tomorrow. My name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.